Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello and welcome to Science Faction 696, Science Faction, where does Parkinson's come from, and Bonobo no more lies.
At the same place where broken hearts go, where does Parkins come from? How do you find your?
I thought Vegas was where broken hearts go. I feel like anytime you're a dude in your 20s and you go through a bad breakup, all your buddies are like, "Let's go to Vegas, come on."
You're right. I should get married to my current fling, right, to the stripper I just met, to Vegas.
Oh no, let's be honest. Sorry, you're not gonna get married to a stripper. Let's be honest. You're all gonna put on shirts you got at Ross and then go out to a club you can't afford, pay a cover that you like that's like a half of your daily wage, dance with women who had nothing to do with you, and then go home and high five each other and say how awesome it was.
Yeah, I'm gonna say on like Vegas. Don't like Vegas. If you've never been to Vegas, go to Vegas, you know, have fun, yeah. You know, like live it up. But it is you're in the middle. You can dress up being in the middle of the desert all you want. Okay.
Yes.
But ultimately you're still stuck in like the most unlivable fucking part of the country.
I'll tell you what was ruined for me. I took a graduate level stats course, like right after I think the first time I went to Vegas, but basically before every other time I went to Vegas. And I just could not from that moment on get myself to gamble. And like you just look around, you're like, well, these places weren't built by them losing money to people like me, so I'm not gonna give you my money. So while and I'm not a big drinker, and so while you and the other guys would go out and do like gambling and drinking and stuff, I would like go to a comedy show or go ride the rides at the Stratosphere. Like I was like a 40-year-old dad when I was 25.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because gambling sucks, and if you do it, you're an idiot. Vegas will always have a spot in my heart because that is where I lost my virginity. My wife and I went there last year, and it was lovely. I don't mean to tell stories out of school, but somebody got lucky. They say the fifth-year anniversary gift is the best one, and so far it has been.
And if you want to lose your virginity in Vegas to Mr. Damian Mercado, go ahead and check out our Patreon.
If you don't go to our Patreon, you're going to lose your virginity to Damian in Vegas.
No, if you don't go, you're going to lose it to him in Reno. And that is sad.
Reno is actually the better deal. Like, if you have to fly, like,
no.
We live in driving distance.
No.
We live in driving distance. But, like, if you're looking for just kind of a campy, like fun little...
Disagree. Heartily disagree. I used to have to go to Reno like 5 times a year, and I every single time it felt like I was descending into a layer of sadness. Sorry if there's any listeners in Reno, by the way, but you know what? I'm also not sorry. You already know about this. Reno is as if you took the saddest 2 square blocks of the worst part of Vegas, put it in the middle of nowhere, surrounded it with pawn shops and sorrow, and then just like had a bunch of old drunkards who were still there from when their like grandfather came during the gold rush hanging around outside. We once drove in there at like 1 a.m. in the morning, crested over the mountain, drove in from the Bay Area, drove in there, and at a 7-Eleven, not a casino, at a 7-Eleven that we stopped at, there was a dude playing slots at 1 a.m., and I was like, well, this is Reno for you.
Yeah, welcome to the state of Nevada. When you cross that line in the middle of the desert anywhere, guaranteed there's some, like, desert person, who, like, spending whatever's left of his Social Security check on that fucking thing. Yeah, guaranteed.
I also feel like every time I go to Nevada and I see everybody gambling, I'm like, wait, aren't hookers legal here? I feel like you guys are doing the wrong vice. Like, this seems short-sighted.
Listen, like, only losers come to pay astronomical amounts of money for a prostitute. When you're a desert person, turns out desert people are real easy. Everybody's just real easy. You can bang other
true.
Desert people. Just super
That's
easy.
True.
It's hot.
That's the real lizard person conspiracy theory. Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is science articles.
Article number one, where does Parkinson's come from?
Somebody hit a really shaky, clumsy gypsy. No, we can't use that one in it anymore. No. With their car. Okay.
Can't use it anymore.
Somebody said Parkinson's 5 times in a mirror. Anybody Ooh. Who has Parkinson's has said Parkinson's 3 times in front of a mirror. And of course, you have to actually believe in the lore as well. And then a really shaky guy will come and damage your nerves.
What if it was like a real uplifting story? Like, what if it was one kid's wish in like the 1800s? It was their Christmas wish for like adults and occasionally like older adults and occasionally not so older adults to get a disease that made them shake, eventually get dementia and die. Like, that was their wish, and they were a really good kid. And so it was like 1 year. It was like a Christmas miracle. It was Miracle on like 32nd Street, but it was like in the early 1800s, and it just caused this wave of what we now call Parkinson's.
So I love the idea of like a psychopathic kid like going through all the steps to get one wish from Santa, like to be the best kid of the year, going above and beyond just to have the discipline to put on that act and then make the most evil wish he could when the time came. He's like, hey, to the rule book? No, there's no law against making an evil wish. We usually try to sort this out through the test. The kid beat the test.
I would love to see that music montage, like of the kid doing all the good things in order to get the kids on his side. And then at some point, I don't know, I guess Santa just shrinks elves to be super small and get inside people's brains.
It's like the most heartwarming tale, the little psychopath that could.
The music montage is to I'm into something good, you know, like just...
So get on it, Hollywood. Listen, psychopaths are big now.
Ooh, even better. Music montage to the song Shake It.
Devo had that was a Devo song, right? No, never mind. Devo had Parkinson's. Because he also was cursed by the time gods for going back in time and trying to bang his mom.
So, real quick, remember, we've talked about Parkinson's a bunch on this show. It is a disease of basically the substantia nigra, a part of your brain that helps regulate a bunch of stuff, including movement, but then also later on things like neural functions as well. And what ends up happening is, as that part goes down, the cells that produce dopamine essentially die out. And it's a dying of these cells that lead to Parkinson's, which is then, you know, exhibited in physical senses by what we call, you know, shaking or tremors or things like that. It usually starts, by the way, much simpler than that, with like an inability to walk and some trouble sleeping and some stuff like that, or a difficulty to walk.
Does it not affect any like breathing or heart?
Especially not in the earlier stages. It's really motor control. So functions that you have, you know, cognitive control over. And then it eventually progresses until it's affecting neurological abilities. It also affects, by the way, like mood and anger and stuff, which makes sense because it's affecting dopaminergic cells. And so in all of this, it comes around to, you know, somewhere between 7 to 10, maybe sometimes as long as 15 years after you're diagnosed, it's usually fatal. Most of the time people are getting this, they're over the age of 60. If you get it before the age of 50, it's considered early onset Parkinson's. And we have known for a while that there are some genetic causes. We've identified at least 90 different genes that are implicated in genetic Parkinson's. And we know that if you do have Parkinson's, there's about a 15% chance that somebody around you does, somebody related to you does. And that is probably, you know, a genetic inheritance that might also have environmental impacts to it too. It might not just be genetic. It might be that it's, you know, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Quick question.
Yes. As
we've discussed on this show that smoking and Parkinson's are related. You know, like if you smoke a lot, you lessen your chance of getting Parkinson's. So if you're a doctor,
so hold on, let's hold on there for a second, because we don't want to breeze over that. Both smoking or more accurately, nicotine and caffeine, drinking, you know, high caffeine coffee or tea, has an inverse relationship with Parkinson's diagnosis. So when you said related, it sounds like it might cause it. It's actually the opposite. It actually provides some sort of protective effect. Whereas if you smoke and you use caffeine, you are less likely to come down with Parkinson's.
I'm just, you know, and then you identified 90 genes that are associated with Parkinson's. I'm just picturing a future science. You know, we laugh about it now, where like you have a medical pack of Marlboros that the doctor gives you because like, hey, you have the gene.
Because you got the gene.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like if you got identified with the BRCA gene and your doctor was like, well, we might want to do a preventative mastectomy because you could get breast cancer. It would be, I don't know, maybe it should be called the Marlboro gene. Like, they should sponsor the research.
Well, honestly, at this point, if I'm big tobacco right now, I'm throwing money at this research left and right. If I'm... because you'd want to find out what's the appropriate, like, listen, if I'm a doctor, I don't want to like recommend 4 packs a day. That seems like overkill. It seems like I'm doing more harm, but there is an appropriate medical amount of cigarettes that I recommend that this very specific population of people smoke. Is, and how many is that? We need science to find out.
I have a theory that it's not actually the nicotine that's causing it. It's actually like a relief or a break from work. Because I swear to God, I used to work with a bunch of people who smoked, and it was like every hour they got 10 to 15 minutes off. And I was like looking around. I'm like, wait a second, what's going on here? I feel like I am working at least a quarter of a day more than you are.
Yes, you experience it way more at blue collar jobs for some reason.
Yes,
and I have had a ton. I'm Mike Rowe. I'm your dirty Mike Rowe, and I have worked from the army to a ton of other jobs. And I have so badly wished that I didn't have what doctors call bitch lungs. Because I was like, I would have taken up smoking like that, because those motherfuckers get breaks all the time.
All the time. And no one questions it. No one's like, whatever. They're like, well, they're addicted. I was like, I don't know. Like, do we hire an alcoholic and just let him drink in the middle of the day?
The crazy thing, like bosses who aren't smokers will like, they go, it's completely natural. Like, no, you're not in the cold. How come you're fucking buying into this bullshit?
So there's clearly a genetic cause, and we've known that for a while. We've also known that there are environmental factors that can cause it. You know, there is head trauma, hence punch drunk guys like Muhammad Ali. You get punched a bunch in the head, you can damage parts of the substantia nigra in some way that later on down the line causes Parkinson's. Similarly, the most famous case, Michael J. Fox, he's actually part of a Parkinson's cluster that is centered around some like TV show or movie or something he did in Canada in like the 1980s, which was done in some like place that had a bunch of like bad chemicals like stored somewhere, and a bunch of people ended up getting Parkinson's. And we have known for a while that certain elements in very specific pesticides seem to give you a higher risk of Parkinson's, whether you're eating them, or especially if you're working with them, if you're like a farmer working around it, you're much more likely to get Parkinson's. So we have known that it's kind of a little bit of both. This new article is really interesting because it actually suggests that a lot more than we think of in terms of the Parkinson's cases is probably from direct environmental factors, and ones that we might be able to prevent. So this is from the Journal of Parkinson's Disease, and it suggests that basically Parkinson's is oftentimes contracted from environmental factors entering either through the nose or through the gut, meaning you're either smelling something, you're breathing it in, or you're eating it and it's getting in through your gut. For inhalation, we have pesticides like paraquat, which is a commonly known pesticide. It's illegal in a bunch of countries, not the US, by the way. We have, by the way, always wash your produce. I've said this 1,000 times. Always, always, always wash your produce no matter what. Unless it's like a banana or an orange.
This is ridiculous. Don't listen to him. He's part of it. He also says wash your hands after you use the restroom. Bobby's full That's of true. Like a lot. Bobby's a hypochondriac. You all wash your hands after you do everything, even if it's number two.
Dry cleaning chemicals. There's common dry cleaning chemicals like chlorines and stuff that will do this as well. And certain types of air pollution. So those are chemicals that, you know, we kind of already somewhat knew, but we think this paper is suggesting plays a bigger role. Then there's ingested chemicals that can include tainted food and contaminated drinking water. So basically, for the last 3 decades or so, there has been a misfolded protein that scientists kind of think might be one of the forces behind Parkinson's. It's one of the reasons that some people think Parkinson's might actually be a prion disease, which we've discussed before, one of my greatest fears. Basically, they think that over time, those proteins clump together in the brain, and that's what causes Parkinson's. And when they first noticed it, people thought, all right, well, what's going on is this misfolded protein is being caused by like an infection, maybe a virus. There's obviously some genetic causes, but then the other ones are probably caused by like a virus or an infection or something. And what this paper is postulating is, no, it's actually certain infectious agents that we're just either breathing in or eating that are bringing that into us. And it might actually be a prion disease. It might be something like mad cow disease, Creutzfeldt Jakob, Kuru, all of those. It might be one that is doing that. And that would make sense with the timeline, because keep in mind, similar to prion diseases, a lot of these happen decades after the exposure to the chemical we're talking about.
That is interesting, because if so, that means that like this prion disease is a bit of a health nut. If you're smoking, it's like coughing. Like, okay, I don't want to be sad. I requested a no smoking brain. I specifically told the hostess.
That might just be like a protective effect on the brain itself. You know, you're using stimulants quite often. That might do something to the dopaminergic centers that make you less likely to then get that prion folding disease in there. We're not sure about that yet. It could theoretically be correlational, but that would be pretty hard to explain given all the data we have on it.
I have another. Okay, so I have a joke. I realize we've been picking on Italians a lot, and you know. Uh-huh. In my heart, I know it's okay, but I'm trying to be better, and I maybe, you know, realize the error of my ways. So I made an edit to the joke. I'm about to see if you can tell me where the edit is. Okay. A second ago, you were like, they were trying to like figure out like why, you know, a bunch of scientists came together. They're like, why, what is causing this? And that's when you hear, tell me, is it a masturbation or sex out of wedlock? And then they quietly have to like take a second and listen to the scientist from the Vatican's idea.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay, all right. Well, isn't it time to go pray? Whip yourself. Isn't it time to go talk to your albino?
The idea that it might be a prion disease is, by the way, this is also why it's really hard to like pin down what might be causing Parkinson's. Because if you're talking about something that's like, oh, what's causing this skin rash? Well, I touched this poison oak leaf a few days ago. That could be it. Even a few days delay is kind of hard, right? I've been in the woods, I rub against 1,000 plants. Fucking who knows which one I touched. It would take me a long time to figure out which one is actually causing the problems, given poison oak usually will take hours to days to manifest, right? But imagine you're talking fucking decades. Again, Michael J. Fox is on a movie set in like 1983, and he doesn't come down with Parkinson's until somewhere in like the mid-2000s. So like, imagine how many things you have done in places you have been since 1983. So it's really hard to pin down what these causes might be. This is very similar to prion diseases, in which, like we talk about mad cow, like there are people who ate tainted beef back in 1993 who will still not manifest the symptoms of the mad cow or Creutzfeldt Jakob disease that they get for another few years, because sometimes there's like a 40-year delay. So with these type of diseases, it's really hard to pin down what's causing them because of the time span and all the stuff we interact with over those 40 years.
Now, and I'm also looking forward to, but also maybe it's something like this. Like we have, we've discussed, what's it, chronic wasting disease. It's in the deer all in North America.
Yeah, that's another prion disease. It's in deer. We're really worried about what it might do in terms of venison to hunters that are eating that deer.
Yeah, I mean, and that's certainly in the population now. There's no way with as much venison as rural America eats. There's no way.
Well, we don't know for sure that prion would get into humans. So like that's the caveat is, does that affect, you know, humans in the same way it would, you know, other animals?
And the NLRB won't let us, those pussies at the NLRB won't let us just do an experiment to find out. What's the chances though that like Parkinson's is I don't know, wasting disease or whatever is
you know. I see. Well, that's a good question. That's interesting. What if it's like a representation of some? I don't know that it would be chronic wasting disease, because that has been kind of more recent within the last, I think, 40 or 50 years. Also, I believe it started in North America, whereas Parkinson's was first noted in like the 1800s, I think in England or something like that. So I am going to say it's unlikely, but that would be interesting to say if it is a prion disease, what if it is one in animals that we haven't yet noted? Now, in this case, they're saying possibly a prion disease, possibly that misfolded protein is actually caused by chemical exposure to something. But what if it's really just that, like, that paraquat pesticide? Turns out that some bug really likes it. Turns out some, like, gnat or fly really likes that chemical, and it ends up carrying this prion disease, and we get it from that thing.
So this is, so Parkinson's is our, you know how like DDT killed eagle eggs in a very obscure way?
That's right.
Parkinson's is our eagle eggs.
Yes. So the paper notes that the nose and the gut are lined with really soft, permeable tissue, and they both have well-established connections to the brain, so that this is like a reasonable method of transfer. And they have two different models. You know, when it comes in through the nose, they're talking about it being a brain-first model, in which case, you know, you've inhaled something and it gets in there literally through the olfactory nerve, which is, by the way, where we thought COVID might be getting into the brain in some people. And we've talked before about the links between the gut and the brain, and that, you know, that would be the gut first model coming in through the gastrointestinal tract, and they can go right up into the brain as well. So both of those would be direct connection lines. They both have the right permeable tissue. Those are both reasonable ways we could see this happening. I think the more interesting question is, so if we see a bunch of people we know are basically getting it because of genetics. We know that because they're related to other first-order relatives that have it, because we see specific genetic markers that we know are related to it. And then we have other people who are getting it from outside environmental factors. Some people are exposed. In fact, the vast majority of people who are exposed to those other environmental factors are not contracting Parkinson's. If everybody who inhaled paraquat and dry cleaning chemicals got Parkinson's, then every single dry cleaner and farmer would have it. And since they don't, there also has to be some second order genetic susceptibility or something that makes you, maybe it's another environmental susceptibility, maybe it's two chemicals combined in one, maybe it's something, but there has to be something that narrows down that percentage of people who are exposed to that thing from the bigger population of those who are exposed to it to those who actually contract Parkinson's disease. And to me, that's the really interesting question because, you know, as far as the genetics go, you know, maybe we find a solution with CRISPR or something like that, but that's almost a different ball game. But when we find the people who are getting it from some environmental factor like Michael J. Fox, is there a way that we can make it so that all those Michael J. Fox is like all the people on that set who did not catch it? Because while there was a Parkinson's cluster and a bunch of people from that movie set caught it, the vast majority of people on the movie set did not catch it. So is there something we can do? Is this just a time in your life when you get exposed to it? Is it, you know, a genetic pre-susceptibility some other way? Are you too close to, like, what is it that makes the difference between those exposed who get the Parkinson's and don't? And then if we can figure that out, I think you could greatly cut down on those people who are getting the environmental ones, except for the Muhammad Ali's. That's your, as somebody who got punched in the head a lot, you know that risk when you step in that ring. That's fine.
Just stop. I mean, if Muhammad Ali could have limited a lot of brain damage if he just stopped, his legacy was secured. I get it. It's hard to retire. I get it. It's hard to quit something you love.
Oh, dear. Very, very interesting. On to article number two. Bonobos aren't the hippies they're portrayed to be.
So those like bonobo communes, it's like those bonobo cults you see trying to recruit you at the airport. I've seen the pamphlets. It seems like a good deal. I'd love to fuck.
They love to fuck. They make great shoes. You know, like, who doesn't like bonobos?
And a toga seems freeing. Well, I know it's not a toga, but it seems like a sheet-based piece of clothing, and I'm down.
I wanted to review this study. I'll tell you why in a bit. First, before I do, let's kind of review what a bonobo is. So there are two primates that are most closely related to human beings that are chimps and bonobos. And they're, by the way, equally as related to us because they split off from each other after the split from humans. Humans and the ancestor of bonobos and chimps split somewhere between like 6 to 9 million years ago. We're not 100% sure on that. And then the pan lineage that then became chimps and bonobos, they were hanging around and around Congo for a decent amount of time. When the Congo River formed about 2 million years ago, it separated those two proto groups. Those north of the river went on to become the standard chimpanzees, and those south of the river went on to become bonobos, who we didn't even know were a separate species until, you know, fairly recently. So they live very, very different lives in very, very different cultures. The bonobos are matriarchal. Usually women run that group, specifically kind of groups of women run that group. They are not quite vegetarians, but they eat a lot of fruit. They're almost...
Because they eat a lot of ass.
Hell yeah.
Am I right, dog?
They're not quite frugivores, but they're pretty close, and they will eat meat. If you hear that they're total vegetarians, that's incorrect. They will eat meat. It's just rare, and they don't usually hunt for it. But they eat a lot less meat. They're fairly friendly. They're fairly friendly to one another. They don't get into large group warfare. Chimps, on the other hand, are fucking insane. Like, you would much rather be locked in a cage with a tiger than a chimp. Because especially a male chimp, if you are a male human, first thing they're going to do is run up and rip your arms out of their socket, pull your balls off, and start eating your face and fingers. And, like, there is nothing you're going to do to stop that motherfucker. He's stronger than you. He's faster than you. You're fucked. You are fucked.
Well, I don't know, bro. In the I trained jiu-jitsu, bro. I think I'd get him in, like, a rear naked, bro. And then, like, what are you going to do, bro?
If in the wild, they go on huge raiding parties to the neighboring group and just murder anything they can find, female, you know, female chimps, baby chimps, other adult chimps. Like, they just massacre whoever they can. They get into huge fights amongst themselves. They form these big coalitions and fight one another in their own groups to take over.
Is it all territorial between these
some of it.
Or is it just
some of
like...
it's territorial, but there's also a lot of just like straight up violence in that particular community. And these are animals that are capable of extreme violence.
They're soccer hooligans. So, it's like gangs of soccer hooligans just going to go fuck up the Manchester fans.
They go on huge hunting parties. So these are active hunters and do eat a lot of meat. They'll hunt monkeys. They'll hunt other chimps. They'll eat, you know, other chimp babies. They're fucking brutal, right? And so for a long time, the kind of, I don't know, the colloquial knowledge
they're
of
orcs.
This has been...
They're literally the they're orcs almost, from fantasy world.
Like, they kind of are. The kind of colloquial knowledge has been that these are the two, almost like the representative of the two sides of humanity. You have the violent, you know, predatory warriors and the peaceful hippies. And by the way, bonobos solve a lot of their problems with sex, much more, you know, so than chimps do. That can, and that's sex with almost any grouping, male on male, female on female, male on female. It's like everything except mother and son. There is some type of sexual component to most of the negotiations that end up going on, and things get solved. And by the way, bonobos essentially, from what we can tell, from what we have seen, never kill each other. So there has been this kind of hippie colloquial, you know, these are the warriors, these are the hippies, and they're really friendly, and they're vegetarians, and they never fight, and yada, yada, yada. Now, I have always been incredibly skeptical of this narrative for a few reasons. One, I was a physical anthropology major, so I kind of got a little bit more into the science of this, even when we didn't know nearly as much. And I, you know, the bonobos do fight each other sometimes. They're not usually in big group warfare, but they do. We happen to live next to one of the greatest zoos on earth, the San Diego Zoo. I fucking love primates. So since I was 6 years old, I have been going and hanging out with the primates, and the best primate enclosure in the San Diego Zoo is the bonobos. They don't have regular chimps. They just have the bonobos. And so I have spent probably literally weeks, if you add up all the hours I have spent just sitting there. I used to do, when I was writing my master's thesis, I used to go just, I could walk there. I'd walk there and just sit down and, you know, write in front of the bonobo cage. I've watched them for hours. I love the bonobos. And I've talked to bonobo handlers and zoo people and researchers and all this stuff. And, you know, one of the people said, like, oh, the difference between, this is a colloquialism, it's not real, but one of the zoo handlers I talked to said, the difference between chimps and bonobos is that if a chimp is angry at you, they'll come at you and try and rip your face off. If a bonobo's angry at you, they'll hide behind the door with a sharpened stick. Like, that was kind of their interpretation of it. That's not literally a true thing, but just kind of their personalities. Well, this new study has come out that shows that actually bonobos can be quite violent, in some cases more so than chimps. So this is really interesting. So this new type of study, which has never been done before, because it's very difficult, by the way, bonobos live in a very war-torn area, political unrest, constant, like, you know, wars and genocides and shit. So it's very, very hard to study them. But these guys got together and did it, and they basically sent somebody to follow chimps and bonobos all day long, from the moment they wake up.
Dressed as a bush, and every time it would sound like piano keys every time they tiptoe.
They just follow them around and write down everything they did, violent altercations, eating, all of that stuff. And what they found was that within their own communities, male bonobos are more frequently aggressive than chimps, and that aggressiveness ends up leading to more mating opportunities, which also goes against this whole narrative of, you know, the matriarchal female group won't allow the violent males, and this is why they're almost self-domesticated. The violent ones actually mate more. So when they followed these groups, which were in the bonobos were in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and chimpanzee groups were in Tanzania, they found that overall bonobos engaged in 2.8 times more aggressive interactions and three times as many physical aggressions as chimps did within their own group. So this was super interesting, and it kind of, you know, puts a hole in that colloquial idea of how chimps and bonobos are these opposite sides of the same coin. Now, the reason we don't note this as much, and as I said before, we still don't have any evidence of bonobos ever actually killing one another, is the difference that these violent altercations manifest themselves in. For bonobos, it was almost always male on male. Chimps, a male chimp will fuck up a baby chimp. It'll fuck up a female chimp. It don't give a shit. Like, it is like a drunk Irishman. Like, that chimp is going to beat the shit out of whatever gets in front of it.
Is that baby giving me the eye hole? That, out of the way, Janice. They're going to box his ears.
Whereas with bonobos, bonobos were basically only male-on-male aggressive and only within their own group. The next part is actually really interesting, which is that chimps form coalitions to fight. Male chimps will get together, they'll grab three of their buddies, let's go fuck up that other buddy. Maybe they're in your own group. Maybe it's a group of chimps somewhere else. They form little war parties. Well, what that means when you get these incredibly capable, you know, capable of violence animals together in these war parties of a couple animals, and they go out and do something, when they fuck shit up, they fuck shit up. And so when they get into fights, it results in horrible injury, oftentimes fatalities. That's why chimps kill each other on quite frequently as opposed to bonobos. So these male coalitions end up causing a lot of damage, whereas a male bonobo against another male bonobo, it's a semi-equal fight, and they don't end up, essentially never end up causing fatalities, and less often cause very, very significant injury.
Okay, so it's not unlike, you know, in nature, you know, the elephant seals, they really go at it, but, you know, it's all in good fun. It's all...
Nah, they trample a lot of babies.
Yeah, well, again, those babies were giving them the fucking eye. Listen, didn't you hear Patty a second ago? Listen, babies need to grow. It's a harsh world out there. And the babies that saw that, they now know not to give an eye unless you're willing to back it up.
I do like the respect bonobos have. Like, they're about to fight and all the other bonobos are like, no, bro, one-on-one. One-on-one. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I'm when you first started talking, I was like, oh, man, I thought I was getting into, like, a cool bonobo sex cult. But then, like, you know, the more information was revealed, I'm like, oh, it's like a creepy Nexium sex cult. But then you describe it, I'm like, no, listen, they live in a society. Societies have problems. There's friction. And it seems like they've found a way to handle it that's still way better than us. So
yeah, that's true. That, to be fair, before we thought they handled their problems solely with friction, being genital friction of one to another. That's how we thought they only handled problems. They still do, by the way, handle a lot of problems that way.
You know, if anything, yes, you have shattered a dream of mine, but, you know, yeah, it's not like it fell through the roof like, oh, they're secretly chimpanzees. No, they're still better than us. They're just not as great as I thought they were.
Yeah, and what is surprising is there was this whole idea of, like, self-domestication. Like, the reason bonobos are so calm is that with a matriarchal society, the females would only breed with the males that weren't violent, so the violent males got kicked out, and then the genetics for violence, you know, faltered in that particular community. Well, they actually found that that's completely incorrect. Whatever caused them to become calmer or more sexually motivated or whatever, that's something else, because, in fact, the females did mate more with the more aggressive, more violent males. So that, like, hypothesis is out the fucking window. At least, again, you know, we're given this information. Maybe there'll be bigger studies at some point that show that this is incorrect. But right now, from what we see, that is absolutely not true. So that is really upended. This study really upended a lot of what, like, idealist kind of thought of bonobos.
You know what? Maybe people are complicated. Maybe bonobos and people are complicated. My wife is the most... If you're a violent guy, if you're the type of guy who's, like, disposed towards violence or anything, that is a turnoff. She wants to leave the room. She does not want to talk to you. You're a douche. But, like, if I'm, like, hitting the... And, like, even people who, like the concept that boxing as a concept exists... That being said, like, if she sees me, like you know, coming home from jujitsu practice or like hitting the heavy bag boxing, she's a little bit more affectionate. I think there is maybe this little thing, like, a lot of those bonobo women are like, I hate a man who does that. Then they're like, God damn it, he's tough. He looks so cool beating up that fucking bonobo. Now I gotta bang him. Fuck.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they're like, oh man, I don't want this guy eating my baby. I better just, like, relieve some tension. You know what I mean?
Are you accusing me of being a chimpanzee?
Oh, no, I was accusing you of being Irish. Way worse. All right, thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 696, where you learned all about where Parkinson's comes from and the real truth of the lifestyles of bonobos. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 697.
Hey, is that a Protestant baby over there? Megan, grab me a shillelagh.
You've been listening to Science Function. Wait, that's not right.